You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Kolaris back to pass, looks end zone, has his man, has the touchdown, Terrence Tolliver. Second and six, Kolaris. Little screen here. And Sinkfield's going to score. There's the dagger. It's officially over. Terrell Sinkfield.
Kolaris, 346 yards, first and goal.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, we took a week off, just like the Ticats did. Life got in the way a little bit last week, so we decided that we
You're taking a lot of weeks off, haven't they, Josh?
Well, I can think of at least eight that were yes. Where they're not supposed to have taken any weeks off, but they did. Yeah. So we did not do a show last week. We decided to combine what would have been last week's show with what would have been this week's show. To make one super show. Hopefully it's worth everyone's time. So we'll quickly discuss the last Ticats game. It seems like forever ago the Ticats were on the field, and it was another loss, Mike. It seems like it's Groundhog Day here on Podski Wee Wee when we talk about the Ticats and what they did on game day. They lost this one. This time it was a 37-18 defeat to the Ottawa Red Blacks. The Cats now obviously 0-8 on the season, and we're done here. So let's move on. I'm kidding. It did look good in the first half, I got to say. It looked especially good in like maybe what the first 5 minutes of the game. That I think it was the second drive of the game. Ticats get the big touchdown from Luke Tasker. It's like, okay, maybe things are starting to turn around. And you know, at the end of the half, it was a 5-point differential. I'm thinking it's not that bad. And then all hell broke loose, and then in just a handful of plays, it was all downhill. And I think there was that point in the game, and I think it was, to me, the major turning point. Obviously, the Brandon Banks drop followed immediately by a procedure call. Very next drive, the Red Blacks score a touchdown. Very next play after the touchdown on offense, Zach Caleros fumbles the ball. Red Blacks scoop it up. The wheels come off the bandwagon there. Game's over. Red Black scored on that fumble. That was it. That was all she wrote. So
yeah. I mean, I loved that play call. Second one.
So did I. It takes balls to call that, and I love when teams do it. I'm a big proponent. Second and one. Not third and one. Second and one. Mm. Take your shot.
Take your shot, and then, you know, plow forward with the quarterback on third and inches or third and one, wherever it is. But beautifully called play, beautifully executed play until it hit Brandon Banks' fingers and he dropped it like a bozo. That was just the worst. They score that touchdown, they're right back in it, Josh. They are right back in that game. I think they were down by maybe eight at the time.
Yeah, it was. I think it was eight. I think you're right.
Yeah, you're looking at a different game, a momentum switcher, and Banks just perfect toss right in his mitts, and he just plain drops it.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm not trying to diminish the drop at all, because that's a score. He catches that. He's in the end zone. It's touchdown. The procedure call on the very next play, might have been the backbreaker more so than the drop, because if they pick up the first down, which they more than likely would have, who knows how that drive ends. But you get the drop, followed immediately by a penalty that puts you in a punting situation.
Who took that? Do you remember? Who took
that? I believe it was – you know what? I'm going to look it up just to be safe, because I do not want to get the name of who took the penalty wrong. But I want to say it was Tony Washington. But I'm going to look it up just to be certain, because as I said, I don't want to say, oh, it was this guy, and then it wasn't that guy. So that would be wrong of me to do, because I think it's important to get the players right when they do well and also when they screw up. So give me a second to look it up, and I will be able to tell you who took the penalty.
That was inexcusable, that penalty after that drop pass. I mean, that's just how the Ticats season has gone. You know, maybe there's a glimmer of hope, and then it's just yanked away from us immediately.
Oh, well, this is interesting. In the official game notes, it says procedure general and on the team.
No player.
No, they did not name a player. I was fairly certain it was 21. Maybe a number of players were offside. So
wouldn't surprise me the way this season's gone that the whole line would jump. But yeah, that was a backbreaker. Both those plays just killed any momentum they had. And you look at the game itself, and what stands out to me is second and third quarter, 0 points generated. I mean, you can't be doing that. You have to, especially like every team is good in the CFL pretty much, except for the Tiger Cats. And you can't not generate points through two quarters.
Yeah. How many first downs do they have in those two quarters? Like two, three? Like it was awful offensive display. And the thing was, they were still in the game until the Greg Ellingson touchdown to make it. Even the Greg Ellingson touchdown, I think it made it 25-10. That even didn't really put them completely out of it. It wasn't until the fumble on the very next play that really killed them. But, yeah, they went something like – here, I'm looking it up right now. Let's see. They went punt, touchdown, field goal, and then between that and then the fumble by Caleros, it was punts all around, and in that span they picked up two first downs. Two first downs – from early on in the second quarter until the fourth quarter, basically two whole quarters of getting two first downs. You get a first down a quarter, essentially. That is, you're going to lose a lot of football games if you're that crappy converting your drives. That's ridiculous.
And you're not doing your defense any favors by, you know, going two and out or maybe getting one first down and punting every single drive. I mean, these guys have had enough trouble on the field this year without, you know, the offense not producing at all, not giving them any time to, you know, rest on the sidelines.
Well, and that's just the thing, too. The defense, you look at the score and you go, man, 37-18. They held Ottawa to all those field goal attempts early and kept this team in the game. Yes, you can say, hey, they should have got punts instead of field goals, and I understand that, but when
they can only do so much.
They can only do so much, and allowing just field goals to me, if this offense was doing anything of note, then allowing just the field goals wouldn't be a big deal. You'd be like, okay, they're allowing field goals, that's fine. Six field goals, like in the, I think Ottawa first six scoring plays were field goals. Like that's, you're holding teams to kicking field goals like that. You should win more football games, but then the offense couldn't get it together, and then by the time it got too late, the defense just fell apart because, like you said, they were on the field too long.
Yeah, this whole season has been very disappointing for the offense as well. You know, there's been a lot of blame put on the defensive and the defensive secondary, but this offense has been just as bad the whole season.
Yeah, they're averaging something like 15 points a game, and we know that they've had a pick six for a touchdown. We know that they've had a blocked field goal for a touchdown. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they also have a blocked punt for a touchdown. So they've gotten points from other areas of the team other than the offense, and they're still only averaging total 15. I think it's, I want to say it's 15.8 or something like that, points per game. Like that's never going to get it done.
That's way too low, especially in the CFL, any football league now. I mean, the NFL, that you're seeing teams score a lot of points, so any football league, 15 points isn't enough. I mean, you know, we talked about Brandon Banks's drop, but he did have some pretty good kickoff return numbers. His average was 36.3 a kickoff return, and he had a long of 55. So we did see some good in the return game from him.
Yeah, it kind of sucks that drop is going to be what's most remembered from this game, because he did finally look like Brandon Banks.
Yeah.
You have to make that play. You're right.
You have to make the play, especially on a team like this. We need everything they can get. So, but you're right. He was a lot better in the return game.
Well, and he was consistent in how good he was. Yeah. It wasn't just like he had one good return and then he had a bunch of crappy ones. It was like he was getting a good chunk of yardage. Then he'd break a couple. Like, that's the Brandon Banks you kind of want to see. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe one of his good returns set up the team's first touchdown. And it's those things that we used to see all the time that we're now seeing so infrequently. And it's why this team is only scoring 15 points a game, because special teams is not helping the offense. The offense is not helping the defense, and the defense is like, it's just all bad.
Yeah. It's nothing seems to be going right for this team right now. And it's, you know, we question, I wonder how they're going to fare against the Argonauts. Well, we'll get into that later.
We will get into that later. I do want to be a little bit positive though, because there was some things in this game. You mentioned Brandon Banks. I wanted to bring him up, but we already have. I want to give a hat tip to Larry Dean and Justin Capicotti. I thought those were two guys who, on their own, were trying to will this team to victory. Dean had 10 tackles. He was all over the place. He was fired up. He had a sack and a forced fumble. Like, he put a hit on Trevor Harris. And again, I think the Red Blacks fumbled three times in this game and recovered all of them. One or two of those goes the Ticats' way. Like, that's just it. The breaks that this team needs to win. The Banks drop is a big one. These fumbles that weren't recovered by the defense. Like, those are the types of things that the Ticats used to have go their way and would lead to those big wins that they would have. Now they're not, and we're seeing the outcome there. And Justin Capicotti's another guy. Two sacks, two tackles, a quarterback pressure. He's been the guy on the defensive line, personally, that I think has probably been their best performer. He has really started to find his role here with this team, and really started to sort of carve out that niche here that he did in Ottawa, because he had a bit of a lost season last year, signed in Saskatchewan, they got traded to Hamilton, but he was with the Red Blacks for a couple seasons, and he was really good. I think he put up something like 23, 24 sacks in two seasons. Like, he had some really good years with the Red Blacks, and it looks like he's back to being that player again, and that's pretty big, because he's a Canadian boy, so they're going to be starting a Canadian on the defensive line, and it looks like they got a good one in Capicotti. So those two guys, I think, are two standouts from this game.
Yeah, and you haven't really heard much about Dean this year, but that was a very impressive performance on him. And Capicotti, I've been impressed with him all season long. He wasn't starting for most of the games, to my knowledge, but when he did get in there, he was making plays. He was getting sacks. He was making nice tackles, and it's nice to see him get somewhat of a comeback year, because you're right, he was a very good player when he was with Ottawa, so it helps out on that defensive line to have another Canadian playing there.
Yeah,
that can produce well.
Yeah, for sure. And the team had another block kick. They blocked an extra point, returned it for 2-point convert. Tim Hortons field exploded when it happened. I chalked it up to maybe half of them thinking it was going to be a touchdown, but it still it was
the same thing.
This team has a knack for blocking kicks. It seems they blocked a number this year, and we thought that they might go. Will Hill had the big game week one, blocking two kicks. We thought maybe that'll go away now that he's gone, but it doesn't look like it. They've blocked punts. They're blocking extra points. They're blocking field goals. I think this is the second straight game, maybe third straight game, where they've blocked a kick. Like, that's hard to do in the CFL once, let alone that many times in the season.
The question is, did they do anything with it once they got possession? Like, yeah. did they turn points out of it? I can't recall, but
they got two on the block extra point.
Yeah. But it's funny you're saying that the crowd is freaking out, and I had a similar thing when I was at the Edmonton Saskatchewan game when Daron Carter returned that for 2 points. I was, because the Saskatchewan fans were just freaking out, and I was wondering do they know that it's only 2 points, but they probably did.
Okay.
They were just excited, Josh.
It's been a long time since this game. I don't really think we need to go into much more detail, but we do have one last thing to cover from this game before we move on. Mike, you have got to hand out this week's Glorious Player of the Week. Who are you picking this week?
You know, I had someone in mind, and then we were talking about it, and I'm not sure if it was the right decision, but I'll go with Luke Tasker, just because I love me some Luke Tasker. I think he's one of my favorite Ticat players, and it was nice to see him have a big game, 6 receptions, 93 yards, and a touchdown. So he was a bright spot among not much with the Ticats in this game.
Yeah, it's kind of sucks that the year we decided we're going to pick a player of the week, it's been really tough.
It has.
But I think Luke Tasker is very deserving of the honor this week. So good pick to you.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful touchdown catch, too.
It was a good throw. Yeah, everything was great. Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to some Ticats news. And, boy, do we have a lot to chew on here. I guess the big news we got to talk about is we got ourselves a new head coach here in Tigertown. Ken Austin stepped down as the team's head coach and named June Jones as his replacement. Shocked, surprised, upset. How do you feel about this move, Mike?
I was surprised. I wasn't necessarily shocked that Ken Austin, something happened with Ken Austin. You know, he's not the head coach anymore. But it is surprising that it is actually surprising that he stepped down, because, you know, a guy like him who wanted all these roles, you know, when he first started out, he was VP, GM, and head coach. Now he's lost two of those things. He's still the head honcho for football operations and everything. But I just thought that Ken Austin enjoyed coaching above everything else. And for him to step down shows that he had to swallow his pride. And, I'm actually kind of proud of him for doing it, because I know it would have been a really hard decision on his part to give this team up.
Yeah, I believe it was a Drew Edwards article on Three Down Nation where he talked about how Ken Austin said during training camp, where they asked him about, like, all the roles he has, and he said that his favorite thing was coaching. So it does take a lot for him to step aside. And we talk a lot about how coaches and people will come out in the media and say things like, we're evaluating everybody. And Ken Austin said numerous times, like, I'm evaluating myself. And people thought that that was lip service. And then you get this news that he's decided to step down, remains the VP of football operations. So he's still with the team, obviously, but he's decided to step down. That tells me that he did evaluate everything and said to himself, maybe I'm not the guy to lead this team anymore. That says a lot about who he is as a football person. I think that's got to be difficult to basically fire yourself. Essentially, when you think about it, he as the VP of football operations fired Ken Austin as the head coach, and that can't be easy. That's for a guy who definitely has an ego and a chip on his shoulder. It could not have been easy for him to go, I'm not the guy to do this anymore.
Now, I don't know why he came to that. Did he think that he lost the room? I think that term is used too often, because
we don't know.
What's going on in that room? We don't know if the players enjoy being coached by Ken Austin or still believe in what he's preaching. So I don't like to use that term very often, but maybe he thought that these players weren't listening to what he was trying to put forth. I'm not sure, though.
Yeah, it also makes me wonder, because June Jones is only hired on for the final 10 games of this season. Makes me wonder what this team could look like next year. This is
what's the long-term plan here?
Yeah, it makes you wonder, because, like, if you look at the other coaches on the staff, they fired Jeff Reinbold, who would have probably been in this role if he hadn't been fired. You got Philip Lawley as the defense coordinator now, who doesn't really have any head coaching experience. You got Steph Patasik, who the hell knows what his role is anymore. Like, it makes you wonder if this is really just sort of an audition for Jones to see if he'll stick around, or if this is sort of the beginning of the end of this crew, and whether we're going to get a whole new whack of guys coaching this team and running this team next year. And an interesting name that I like, look, Orlando Steinhauer makes sense to come back if they could lure him back. He was obviously touted as a head coach in waiting. So if Ken Austin stays, maybe they try to lure him back from Fresno State. Who knows if it'll work? When Steinhauer signed down there, we talked about it. There's a lot more opportunities for him for advancement as a coach in college in the U.S. and there is in the CFL, but head coach is a head coach job, and there's only so many of those in the world, so maybe he could be enticed to come back. What about maybe Tommy Condell? He's the receivers coach in Toronto right now? And there's all that talk. There was a rift between him and Austin, and no one really knows the full story as to why he left. But if Austin's not going to be the head coach, or even more so, if Austin's out of the organization, you think they could probably talk – Tommy Condell still lives in Ancaster, for as far as I know. Mm-hmm. Maybe talk him into coming back, because he seems to be – that's the guy that everyone sort of – the reason Caleros slid is because Condell's not there. What if you bring him back as the head coach? I don't know. Again, we're just we're spitballing here. We're speculating. We're well away from any sort of decisions being made. But I think that would be sort of a move that I could see appeasing a lot of Ticats fans.
Yeah, I'd like to see that, because we all know that Caleros' best years were when Tommy Condell was around, or a year and a half, or whatever it was. But, you know, he I'd love to see him back. He's obviously doesn't have a high ranking job with the Argonauts right now. And if you gave him the opportunity to be a head coach in an area where he still lives, I don't really see him turning that down unless the riff, if there is a riff, we don't know. But if there's a riff, is it that bad that he wouldn't come back just because Ken Austin is still VP? Or would he be intrigued to come back because he's not directly under Austin anymore with a new, you know, he's head coach. So I don't know. He'd have full reins, I'm assuming, in the coaching department, but you never know if Ken Austin's going to stick his face in there or not.
Yeah. Well, Austin said he's not going to be on the sidelines. He's not going to be at practice with the players with Jones there. So maybe he would, he's going to try it out. Maybe he's going to try this out for the rest of the season and realize that just being the VP is not enough for him. And maybe he decides, hey, I'm going to go elsewhere, maybe coach and call it. Who knows? Anything is possible at this point. I just think there's a lot of intriguing options. And I, like I said, I think Tommy Condell would be a guy. Hey, we're bringing Tommy Condell back. I think even if the Ticats finish the season 3-15, let's say, and it's like, man, there doesn't look like there's any hope. And then they say, oh, by the way, whole new front office, who knows who they bring in, and Tommy Condell's the head coach. I think a lot of people would breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of hard to figure out whether June Jones is a long-term commitment or not, because we know that he brought in a coach, and I know we're not going to mention it, but he brought in a coach that is his guy, I'm assuming. So is there going to be more coaches that come in? And if there are, I'm assuming that it's going to be a more of a longer-term thing, because why bring in all your guys if you're just going to be coaching for 10 games the rest of the season?
Yeah, it makes sense. I guess we'll have to wait and see. I just think there are a lot of intriguing options out there for the Ticats going forward after this season. And one thing I do know, it's not going to be a dull off season for us here on the show. I think we're going to have a lot to talk about come this off season. So let's move on from the Ken Austin stuff and let's talk some trades, Mike. So, Ticats made a couple deals. The big one, I think, obviously, is one that I think sent a few shockwaves around the CFL. Ticats sent John Chick to the Edmonton Eskimos along with a fifth-round pick in 2018 to Edmonton for a second-round pick in 2018. Chick played 26 games for the Ticats, 56 tackles, 16 sacks, 5 forced fumbles, was a CFL All-Star last year. But I think we can both agree that his 2017 was starting – he looked like he was starting to show a few cracks. And maybe it was just what he was asked to do. Maybe it's just the players around him, but – he only had 14 tackles and 2 sacks this season, and that wasn't great. Although he did look pretty good when I saw him play for the Eskimos against the Riders. That motor's still there, obviously, and maybe he'll be rejuvenated by playing with a team that's got Grey Cup aspirations. But for the Ticat side of this thing, this deal pretty much signals the end of the season, right? Like they've essentially.
Yeah, I think so, and I'm not, you know, I'm not totally against this move. It's a player that is getting up in age, and he's done a lot of great things in a Ticat uniform. He's been one of the best players over the last 2 years, but, you know, I think it works for both franchises. You give Edmonton a guy that can still play for the rest of the year, maybe even another year, who knows, on an already talented defensive line. You get that extra piece, so that's great for them, and the Ticats get a second-round pick back. And you might scoff at a second-round pick, but you never know what that could turn into, so... it's a future move, and you know, I was surprised by it, but I wasn't overly shocked to see them release a veteran player of his stature. You know, if it wasn't him, it would have been someone else probably.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a good deal for both sides. Edmonton wins in the now. They get a 34-year-old player who's maybe got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. From having a bit of a down season, and he's a guy who's always a good, like, he's a good locker room guy. You don't ever hear anything negative about John Chick, so I'm sure he's going to be missing here. You probably saw it, the outpouring from his former Ticats teammates, just saying like it was a pleasure. Like obviously this guy is beloved.
But for there's a lot of excitement from the Eskimo players as well when they heard about it. So.
Yeah, of course there would be. And in the Ticats, you said, they get a second-round pick. And, yeah, the Eskimos are probably going to finish, you know, who knows, actually. The West is really tough to pick. But that pick's probably going to be in the mid to late second round. But you can find quality players there, and the Ticats are going to try to replenish their depth. And I think it's a good move for both sides. The Eskimos win in the immediate. The Ticats win long term, perhaps in getting some Canadian players. They also free up some salary cap space. Who knows what this team is going to do cap wise? Maybe they're going to bring in some American free agents after NFL cuts. We've heard how many times about Terrell Sinkfield. He's coming to Hamilton if he doesn't make it in the NFL. So there frees up money there. Not that it would matter for this season, frankly, but you never know what they could be doing salary cap wise with this move as well, because John Chick didn't come cheap. So, you know, there's positives to be looked at it from the Ticats. In the immediate, it looks crappy. It does, because you lose a guy who was a fan favorite. I know he was only here a year and a half, but there are a lot of John Chick jerseys. You see at Tim Hortons Field, this guy was beloved by Ticats fans, and I think rightfully so. But I don't know. I won't say I like the move, but I understand the move, and I don't think it's the worst haul you could get for a player on a large contract that, and you give him a chance to compete for another championship, and that's good for him as well.
Yeah. I like the trade on both sides, as I said earlier. And, you know, you got to pull for a guy like John Chick. You know, he's seems like an all around decent human being. So if he can get a championship in Edmonton, I'd be happy for him.
So a second deal happened. Actually, this was consummated just before the Ticats played the Red Blacks. The Ticats sent defensive lineman Mike McAdoo and a sixth-round pick in 2018 to the Riders for Ricky Collins, the receiver who I won't say fell out of favor, but that's a pretty loaded receiving core. So he kind of was the odd man out. And a seventh-round pick in 2018. Collins played in 16 games for the Riders, 48 catches, 720 yards, 2 touchdowns. So pretty good numbers over 16 games for a guy that wasn't a highlight receiver. So what do you think about this deal? If you let me start, I like it. I bring in a young player, another young receiver. Receiver's not really an issue for the Ticats, but you can never have enough young receivers. And he's a dynamic playmaker, also a guy that can do returns. So I think it's a good deal for the Cats.
Yeah, it's definitely a player who has a ton of potential. You know, we saw him in his first year in Saskatchewan. And he did some really impressive things. Is he the player that used to be a quarterback and he was translated into a receiver, or I can't remember?
Oh, you've even stumped me on this one. I'm not sure.
But there was
No. That's our Monty Edwards.
Okay.
Monty Edwards. He played quarterback for Appalachian State. That's your
right. Okay. Well, yeah. Ricky Collins Jr. Though. Yeah. He's a young player, and there's a ton of potential there. We don't know how he's going to turn out, you know, but I also like the move. You know, you get younger, you get more talent, and that's what this team needs right now. And, you know, we have a couple young guys that could be turned into something, but you never know. You know, they could drop off real quick. So bring as many guys as you can in and see what sticks. Because at this point, I mean, what else is there to do, right?
Well, essentially, and fans aren't going to like to hear this, this team's running an extended training camp right now. They're running an extended preseason. They're looking under every rock to find guys that can be on this team for next year. They have talent on the defensive line, especially Americans. Davin Coleman looks like a guy that you can keep around, that can be – he filled in for Drake Nevis, who filled in for Brian Hall. Like, he looks like a guy that you can keep around for a few years. So it's not like McAdoo, who I just found out was actually released by the Riders today. So essentially, the Ticats traded a sixth-round pick for Ricky Collins and a seventh-round pick, so that's an even better deal.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
But yeah, like this team's going to be basically running an extended preseason, extended camp, and they're just trying to find guys that can maybe contribute for this team down the road. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, I don't think it is either, especially when you've seen how this guy can perform. So you've seen tape on him, you've seen his yards that he racked up and his touchdowns. So there's a lot of potential there, and I'm excited to see him play.
All right, speaking of a lot of potential, let's move on to some CFL news. We got one major bit of news, and this happened a couple weeks ago, so we're a little late on this, but we didn't do a show last week, so we got to talk about it now. The Saskatchewan Roughriders have acquired quarterback Vernon Adams from the Montreal Alouettes. So Saskatchewan gets Adams in a fifth-round pick in 2018. The Owls get defensive back Tavon Campbell, a third-round pick in 2018, and a third-round pick in 2019. What do you think of this trade? Does this kind of signal that maybe Vernon Adams is going to be their quarterback of the future after Kevin Glenn?
Oh, who knows what's going through Chris Jones's mind? I mean, Don't they have like three of the quarterbacks that used to be on Montreal's staff?
Yeah, they have Glenn Adams and Brandon Bridge.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard that ever happening, but you know, Vernon Adams, also a guy with some potential. You know, we've seen some flashes. He hasn't played a ton, but yeah, I think he's got maybe one or two starts, and he could be the I mean, you've heard a lot of talk about Chris Jones wanting Franklin from Edmonton for his future quarterback, but we don't know if that's going to happen or not. And bringing this guy in, maybe he has a different idea now.
It's funny you bring up Franklin. That's actually something I had here. Do you think this takes the Riders out of that perceived James Franklin bidding war this offseason? Because to me, maybe it's not necessarily takes them out of it, but this gives them sort of a buffer in case Franklin, the Esks trade his rights somewhere else and he signs, or he goes to free agency and signs somewhere else, or he stays in Edmonton. Like, this kind of gives them, okay, if we don't land Franklin, at least we have Adams, and Adams is a guy that they could develop.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, just a backup plan in case they die, because I think they're still going to go hard after Franklin, no matter who they have on the roster for quarterbacks, because Chris Jones is really high on him. So, yeah, I don't think it takes them out of the bidding war for him, but it's a good, solid backup plan, I'd say. And you never know. Maybe Kevin Glenn could start another couple seasons for the Rough Riders, and they have a solid backup in Vernon Adams.
Yeah, hey, anything's possible. If Franklin doesn't go to Saskatchewan, let's have a little fun here. Where do you think he ends up?
That's a tough one, because a lot Toronto.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Toronto.
Yeah,
Toronto, because you look at the age of the quarterbacks in the league, and relatively they're pretty young, except for Ray. And obviously Glenn. But Ray, that makes sense, because maybe he's on the way out, and just with all the injury troubles he's had and all that, you bring in a guy like Franklin, who is a young player who could be something special and could be the next project for Mark Trestman.
Yeah, it you're right. It is tough. I've heard some rumblings that the Ticats could be interested in him and could move on from Zach Caleros.
I've heard the rumblings that Ticats are seriously interested in Johnny Manziel.
Oh, well, didn't we talk about Johnny Manziel like 3 weeks ago and said we never talk about him again?
We never talk about, but I saw this thing on TSN with Naylor and Farhan Lalji, and he said that the Ticats, that's the guy they want. That's what he said. I don't know how true it is, but that's what he said.
Oh, Jesus Christ. God. Please, no. Yeah. Just please, yeah. No. Ottawa could be a landing point. Like, I know Trevor Harris. You can't blame any of the Red Blacks woes on Trevor Harris. His numbers are fantastic. But he's not signed after this season. Maybe we're going to get one of those great QB carousel off seasons like we had back in the mid-90s when, like, Danny McManus left BC to go to Edmonton. And then that forced us. You know what I mean? Doug Flutie went to Toronto.
Dunnigan was changing teams every half year.
it was wild.
Macy Ham, yeah.
So maybe we'll get one of those. Who knows what the first down, but like if Franklin goes to Toronto and Ray's out of Toronto, but Ray can still play, where does he land? And wherever he lands, does that force someone out? Like this could be a really fun offseason for guys moving around.
You never know what's,
position.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen with Caleros. You just – Jennings, you know, you never know there. I think that – Wally Buono is still behind him, but you know, he's not doing himself any favors with his performances. So yeah, there could be a lot of changes going on, and that makes for a very exciting offseason.
Yeah, how jinxy are we, man? We named Jennings our MOP, and he's been benched essentially for Travis Lule. We both have the Ticats going to the Grey Cup, so either we're complete idiots, or we just give bad juju to everyone out there.
Well, to be fair, I think that no one – I mean, if you told me that the Ticats would be out of it the game before Labor Day, I'd be like, nah, well, like, we're not going to be spectacular, but we're going to be, you know, around 500 or something, you know, as usual. So this has just been a really surprising season on many fronts.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess that's it for the news. Let's move into the game preview. It's Labor Day, Mike. The classic is – here, Ticats do what they do almost every Labor Day, and they're hosting the Toronto Argonauts on Monday. We don't really have many specifics to get into here. We talked about this before the show started, and it's like, what are we going to talk about? Oh, they need to get pressure. They need to throw the ball. Like talked about this a couple weeks ago. It's the same crap we have to talk about every week. So we decided to do something a little different here, and we decided to make this a Labor Day memories game preview. Mike, what are some of your favorite memories of Labor Day? Favorite games attended or watched on television, or just what do you remember most about Labor Day?
Well, I remember, I can't recall which year it was, but I'm sure you'll be able to remember quickly after I kind of describe it here, the year that it ended in a tie, the 33-33.
That was, that game? If I'm not mistaken, 2004.
I remember that game for a couple reasons. One, the person jumped out of a plane and had a parachute and almost electrocuted themselves right by Iverwind Stadium on the power line. It was like he was so like close to death. It's funny now because he was fine, but yeah, it was a pretty weird situation. But I remember my dad had season tickets in like the press box that year, and the press box. But you know, there was like a fan side to it. Yep. Yeah, he was sitting there for the year, and he couldn't go. And I took my friend, and I think it was one of his first games. And he's a big Tiger Cat fan now, so I credit myself with making a Ticat fan from birth. And I just remember that was just an outstanding game. I think Troy Davis ran for something like 200 plus yards. And it was just, there was a brawl at the start of the game. And it just had that Labor Day feeling. And it was kind of unsatisfying, the tie at the end. But I do recall that the Ticats were probably pretty bad around that time. So I wasn't too sad about it. I was just glad that it was one hell of a game and a very, very entertaining game as well.
Yeah, that 04 season was the one year the Ticats made the playoffs in that terrible mid-2000s era from like 03 to 08. That was the one they finished 9-8-1 and lost in the East semifinal to Toronto, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, the tie, I remember watching on TV. I was living in Toronto at the time, so I wasn't in Hamilton for Labor Day, but I remember watching it on TV and being like, man, a tie, well, hey, it's better than a loss, I guess what I was saying. It was a year after the team went 1-17, so they could have gone 0-0-18, and I think it would have felt like a victory.
Yeah, exactly. And I do have a memory. I don't remember what it was, but I was fairly young. It was in the early 90s, and I think Ozzy kicked a field goal to win it on the last play of the game, and I just remember being really small and just jumping around and celebrating with all these people that I didn't know around me.
That sounds like me during the 1980s final, actually. Except I wasn't small, I was a big guy.
I was also at the last Labor Day game that was played at Iverwind Stadium. So even though they lost, it was still a special game to be at.
Yeah, that was a pretty good game, too. I think they lost like 33-30. I remember Earl Winfield was there. Like, that was who's my all-time favorite Ticats player, maybe all-time favorite CFL player. So that was cool for me to see him, first time he was on the field since he retired. So that was, I remember that one very vividly. Some of the ones that stick out to me, 1991. It's the game I go to whenever I think of the Ticats on Labor Day, especially when they're really bad. That was the year the Argos won the Grey Cup. I think they came into the game at 5-2, maybe 6-2. Ticats, I'm fairly certain, were 0-8, and they absolutely obliterated the Argos. The final score was something like 42-24 or something. It was just a butt kicking. And that was during the heyday at Dunnigan, John Candy, Wayne Gretzky owning the team, Rocket Ishmael, who was the reason Rocket Ishmael came into the CFL was a big deal. I think I've talked about it on the show before. It was a big deal for me and my dad because we're huge Notre Dame fans. So it's like, oh my God, he's going to play. We watched Argos games on TV. The Argos were a hot ticket that year, selling out the Sky Dome all the time. And then they came in on Labor Day. The Ticats are awful. And they just crushed them. So that's the one big Labor Day game that I always – it's the one I always go to. And the other one that I think was pretty special was the very first one at the new stadium. It was the day they opened Tim Hortons Field. Wasn't a particularly good game. I believe the final score was something along the lines of like 13-12 or something. It wasn't a lot of fun. It was a tough game. I think only one touchdown was scored in the entire game, but it was the opening of Tim Hortons Field. I walked in there for the first time and just was like, this feels different, but this is nice. And and sitting down and watching the game at the new stadium. It was a fun afternoon. Kind of felt like a rebirth of Ticats football. They came to that game. They were bad in that game too. I think there was something like 1-6, and that they won on Labor Day, and then they started this turnaround where I think they went like 8-3 the rest of the year, finished 9-9, hosted the East Final, got to the Grey Cup. Like, it was a lot of fun to be there for that first one at Tim Hortons Field. So those are the two I always think of, 91 and 2014.
Yeah, those are good ones to pick. I don't remember the 91 ones. Labor Day games specifically. Who knows? Maybe I was even there. I'm not sure, but I'll take your word for it that, you know, they were the bad boys of the CFL, the Argonauts in 91, and they had all the players and they were just expected to win, you know, pretty much every game and just, you know, walk away with the Grey Cup. And eventually they did, but for one day, the Tiger Cats whooped their ass, and that's you know, we say you can lose every game, just win on Labor Day. That's not true necessarily, but it is really important to win on Labor Day.
Well, that's also the game that kind of helps the folklore of anything can happen on Labor Day. Records don't matter. Labor Day is a different beast. We're going to this game. Argos are in first place. Ticats are in last place. They haven't won. It's very similar to that 91 game, but on Labor Day, like, records don't seem to really mean much of anything. And yeah, there are years where the Ticats are terrible and the Argos come in and spank them. And there are years where it's, you know, the Ticats are great and they crush the Argos. But Labor Day is a different beast. And I know people in Calgary kind of understand it. Obviously, Calgary and Edmonton have their Labor Day thing. Winnipeg and Saskatchewan have their Labor Day weekend thing, so they get it too. But it's like, it's just a different beast. Like, it doesn't matter how bad the Ticats are. I think every fan goes into Labor Day thinking the Cats can win this game. And 91 to me is a perfect example of that, because the Argos went on to win the Grey Cup. They were the best team in the CFL that year. But on that one glorious afternoon, they were not good enough to beat the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And it is a game that will forever be etched in my memory.
And you look at the Argos team this year, and I'm not sure what to decipher from them. I don't know what kind of team they are, because they look great 1 week, usually against Eastern opponents, and then they play a Western opponent and just can't move the ball at all. Now, the defense is pretty good, but just offensively speaking, they have a really tough time sometimes, and sometimes they look great. It's very hard team to figure out. I'm assuming since they're playing an Eastern team, they will be, once again, great.
All right, well, let's get on our picks then, since we're talking about this game. But we'll end with the game that ends the weekend, which is Toronto at Hamilton. We've got to start with the game that kicks off the weekend, Thursday night in Montreal. I guess this is the new Labor Day weekend rivalry, although the game's on a Thursday, and then they go Sunday, Monday, Monday. Why isn't this game on a Saturday? Or why not do a doubleheader on Sunday? Like, I don't get why this game is on Thursday. But anyway, I digress.
Well, they got to get that Thursday night football in the summer at least, and then once NFL hits, they'll take it away.
But this is ridiculous, because the NFL season is about a week and a half away. Like, this is the last Thursday game. Just move it to the Sunday. Do a Sunday doubleheader. Because the NFL plays all their final preseason games, not that they matter, on Thursday. Bump this to Sunday. Do a 1 o'clock start in Montreal. Do a... like a 1 o'clock Eastern start in Montreal, do a 4 o'clock Eastern start in Saskatchewan. Bingo, bango, bongo. You got two great doubleheaders, Sunday afternoon, Monday afternoon, evening. I think it'd be perfect. Anyway.
Maybe they have conflict with
with McGill. You know. Yeah, that's possible. Well, then move it to Ottawa. Have Ottawa host.
Have it on Saturday.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. Ottawa's at Montreal on Thursday, Mike. Who do you got in this one?
I got to go with Ottawa. I see them as a rising team right now. I think that they have a terrible record right now. I mean, they're 2-6-1, I believe, or yeah, something like that. But
no, 3-6-1.
3-6-1. See, that now they're even better. So they are on the upswing. They have shown all season long that they can produce points and move the ball effectively. I think they're going to take this one against Montreal. Montreal looked really bad in their last game. Or was it the game before?
It was the game before. They looked pretty good against Winnipeg. Not having the show last week is throwing us off.
I know.
I'm going to take the Owls, and here's why. Montreal has been a lot better at home than they've been on the road. I think they're 3-2 at home. One of their losses came to Winnipeg this past week, which was a hard-fought game. Winnipeg, who looks great right now, maybe the hottest team in the league at the moment, didn't blow them out. Montreal stayed with them. I think the Owls just at home have something better going on. I think Ottawa is – I agree with you. I think they're a team on the rise, and I think seeing them put together a couple of good performances, I think we're going to see them make the playoffs, honestly. But in this one, I think I'm going to side ever so slightly with the home side. I think it's going to be a pretty close game, but I'm going to take the Owls in this one. Now we get to the three biggies of the weekend, the three rivalry games. Sunday afternoon in Saskatchewan, the Bombers and the Riders. Who you got, Mike?
This is a tough game to pick for me, but I'm going to go with the Blue Bombers because what I've seen out of them in their last couple of games has been very impressive. Andrew Harris is one of the best players in the league right now. He is running a way that I've never seen him run before. He is just putting his head down. He has speed, and he's putting his head down and running over people. So I have just been crazy impressed with Andrew Harris this year and really impressed with Matt Nichols as well. So Saskatchewan also looks like a good team all of a sudden, but I just think the Bombers are just a bit above them still.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. I really do think this new stadium's having their first Labor Day weekend game. Those fans are going to be at full throat. Bombers are coming in hot. The Riders have won two in a row with that big, big win against the Eskimos on the road. Their first road win against a Western team in like 3 years. Like that's a big monkey to get off your back. I want to take the Riders because I think that home crowd could have these guys jacked, but I just look at Winnipeg and I see a team that could be destined for something much bigger than simply winning on Labor Day Sunday.
I think they might be the best team in the league right now. They're all close to, I mean,
it's them in Calgary.
Calgary, I don't know what. Calgary's defense is phenomenal. They are the best defense in the league in my eyes. Their offense hasn't been overly spectacular. They have put drives together to win games, and that's what winning teams do. And I'm not taking anything away from them, but if they could get that offense full throttle, I think that they would be heads above everyone else in the league, but they just haven't done that yet. So it's pretty close between a couple teams in this league right now, I think.
Yeah, I can't really disagree with that. So that said, I'm taking the Bombers, but I don't feel that confident in it. But these two teams, I just got to take the one that's got the better record right now and the one that's hot. So I got to take Winnipeg in this one. Okay, Labor Day Monday, Mike. First game is in Alberta, the Battle of Alberta between the Eskimos and the Stampeders in Calgary.
It's just still weird to me that
the
West game is first, yeah. But anyways, go on.
Who do you got? Who do you got between the Esks and the Stamps?
That is a tough one. Again, another tough one. I'm going to have to go with the Stamps. They're at home. They don't lose at home. The Eskimos went 7-0 with all those injuries, but I think now it's starting to catch up to them a bit. I got to go with the Stamps.
Yeah, I'm taking the Stamps too. At McMahon, that win streak's going to end at home eventually. They're not going to win there forever in perpetuity, so they're going to lose at some point to a team. It could be this week, but I think those injuries are catching up to the Esks too, man. I think getting those seven wins was big because I think it'll help them when it comes to playoff seeding, but I think they're going to their third loss in a row. But they'll still be sitting at 7-3, which is not too shabby when you come out of Labor Day. And finally, the main event of the weekend, Monday night, Toronto at Hamilton. Mike, who do you got?
I'm sorry, I got to go with Toronto. I know that it's blasphemy. It's Labor Day and anything can happen, but this Ticats team just hasn't shown any of us that they can put together a win, and Toronto performed exceptionally well against Hamilton in the first game of the season, mind you. But I don't know if Ray's on his game. Yeah, they're going to be hard to stop. So I got to go with the Argonauts.
I too am taking the Toronto Argonauts. Hamilton has not lost to the Argos at Tim Hortons Field in the regular season or the postseason. They haven't lost on Labor Day since 2012. But all streaks are meant to come to an end, and if this season is going to hit rock bottom, which I thought it already had, but I guess I was wrong, losing to the Argos on Labor Day would be, I think, rock bottom. And at some point, the Argos are going to win in Hamilton, and look, this Argos team is better than the Ticats. They just are. So I am begrudgingly, unfortunately, and unhappily taking the Toronto Argonauts to win on Labor Day. So let's get into the questions. We got three pretty good ones. I'll leave the fun one for the end. Let's talk about a couple of serious isn't the right word to describe it, but they're a little bit more football focused and not as funny. So the first one comes from the Three Donation comment section. Ari Katz asks us, Mike, could you address the question of a CFL divisional realignment doing away with the East and West divisions and having possibly just one division? How do you see this working? Do you think that the league or its owners and board of governors would support this? How would you see them determining playoff seeds if this were to be done? So, Mike, let's talk about divisional realignment. Do you where do you stand on a one-division CFL, which has over the last couple of years taken on a lot of steam?
I, for the longest time, have been an East-West guy. But, I mean, how many years do we have to go where the East is just atrocious? And I know that there's been, you know, a couple of blips here and there where the East has had pretty good records, but for the most part, for the most of my life, the East has always been the weaker division to the West. And I think it's time that we make it one division. I think that we should, the teams that have the best records should make the playoffs. And I know the crossover does work at times, but in the case of this year, it could be the fifth place team in the West doesn't make the playoff, even though they have a better record than, say, the second place team in the East. So, but on the discussion of will the Board of Governors go for it, the West maybe, not the East. There's no way that the East goes for this. They want to maximize their profits. They want to be in the race for as long as they can so they can get fans to the stadium. So do I want it to be one division? I think so. At this point, I think that I've swung that way. But do I think it's going to happen? Not necessarily.
Never in a million years will it happen. The owners, the Board of Governors, are interested in their own self-interest to kind of be redundant there. And there is no way you will get the owners of the Alouettes, Ticats, Argos, and Red Blacks to agree to essentially one of them every year forfeiting two of them guaranteeing a home playoff game. It's never going to happen. Would it be the right thing from a competitive standpoint? Probably. But it's like an NFL team in Toronto, it's wishful thinking. I understand the reason for switching to one division. I think the last couple of years, well, last year and this year in particular, the West has been way better than the East. But last year, the West was way better than the East, and the East team won the Grey Cup. And again, you could say
they still would have got in. They still would have got into the playoffs in the one division, though, right?
They would have. And I understand. And people can say, well, they got to the Grey Cup because they hosted the East final, and that's fine. But they got to the Grey Cup in a game, a one-game winner-take-all, and beat a heavily favored team. Who's to say that that wouldn't happen in a playoff game? Now, what happens if, say, like again? I'm not saying I'm against one division. I like the East-West breakup. In fact, I'm going to argue in a bit for something a little more drastic than what we have right now. But what happens if, say, we get the top, we do one division, top six teams makes the playoffs. The first top two teams get a bye. That 5 and 6 seed win the first round. So last year that would have been Hamilton and Ottawa. And then they win in the second round and you get two under 500 teams in the Grey Cup. Both from the East. Again, probably not going to happen, but it could happen. So, like, there's pros and cons to both sides. Now, here's the radical solution that I have. What if we went more of the baseball route, and instead of combining these divisions, we almost separated them completely? What if teams in the East and West played the teams in their division more? I understand the reasons not to do this. I don't want to go to and see the Alouettes four times in a year or whatever the case may be. But say there's an 18-game schedule, right? So say so the East would play five games against the West. The West would play four games against the East. And then they would play the rest of the remaining games against the division. And you could alternate each year so Calgary comes to Hamilton one year. Hamilton goes to Calgary the next. Sort of like that. So they all play each other, but they don't play each other as often outside of the division, but inside of the division, they play more. I know it's crazy. I know that that also is probably never going to happen. But it's one of those things where it's like, what if the West was to play the West more, the East was to play the East more? Maybe that would better align things than it is now. Because right now, East teams play more games against the West division than they do against the East division. To be honest,
it's an interesting idea. I just And I'm sure you just said it. Like, I hated, I think when we had an eight team league, like we'd play Winnipeg, the one year we played Winnipeg, like three times in a row or something.
Yeah. I remember there was one year we played Winnipeg four out of the first seven games of the season.
Yeah. I hated that. I don't know. Like, it's just, we're not baseball where we play a four game series or whatever. It's football. It's, they're supposed to be, I like how it works now where you don't see teams so much, so closely together, you know? I just don't like that idea.
I just look at it as this, and I'm fine with not liking the idea. This is the idea and we have to do it. If we ever get to the point of a 10-team CFL, and we could be looking 20, 30, 40, 50 years in the future, but if we ever get there, we're essentially going to have a balanced schedule where everyone plays everyone twice. Because you're gonna have nine opponents, 18 games. You're gonna play every team twice. At that point, there is no need for divisions, because everyone plays the exact same schedule. Now, this would be the start of say, okay, if you want to win your division, you got to play your division more. Like, yeah, it, because the league is so small. Like, if you look at the NFL, again, the AFC East, New England, they play two games against teams in their division, and then they don't play two games against anyone else the rest of the year. Like, you play your division more because it matters more. And again, this is just an idea off the top of my head, but that's just, I don't know. I like the East-West divide. I do. It kind of goes away because Winnipeg's flopped back and forth, but I'm not saying, if the league was to come out tomorrow and say, we're going to one division next year, I wouldn't be upward and say, well, I'm never watching again. But I don't know. I kind of like the East-West division.
I do like the East-West. It's, you know, it's been like that for forever. And if we got the 10th team and we had five in each division, I think that would be great. And, you know, to keep the East-West rivalry alive. And the other thing is, you know, for TV purposes, for the Grey Cup per se, there's Calgary versus Edmonton or something. You know, TV wants there to be an East representative. So I think you'd get pushback from them as well.
You might. I honestly don't think, and that's been an excuse, and it's actually been a reason I've used against it. I don't know. Would you be less likely to watch the Grey Cup if it was BC and Calgary than if it was Montreal and Saskatchewan? I don't think I would be.
I wouldn't be, no.
But you think?
But I think that they're just worried about, you know, there's no East team in it, so no one from the East would watch.
Maybe it's the hockey thing where once Canadian teams are eliminated from the NHL playoffs, you see ratings plummet. Yeah. Maybe that's what they're thinking. I don't know.
Maybe there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of, say, Montreal Alouette fans, but they don't give a shit when, you know, Saskatchewan plays BC.
No, I totally agree with that. I think you're always going to find that. I think the diehards are going to be there no matter what. But, yeah, I don't know. It's definitely a much more nuanced topic that we can't really cover in a seven-minute question on here, but
very
interesting
topic though.
It is. It's a great topic. John Hodge and myself did a back and forth last year about this when it came up. Like, both sides, I think, have merit. I don't think there's any one side that's right or wrong in this. But the grand scheme of things, it's would the league and its owners ever agree to this? And the answer to that is absolutely not.
Well, there's a solution to this. Just the Eastern teams need to step up their game.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, of course.
The problem. I don't know what the problem is with the disparity year after year, but you see this in other sports too. I mean, the Western Conference in hockey and the NHL is always better. The Western Conference in basketball was better for years and years.
Still,
I'm not
is.
Sure. Yeah. So
still is. It's the Cleveland Cavaliers and everyone else in the East and in the West. It's a dogfight.
Yeah. So you see this in different sports, you know, the four major sports in North America, and it's a bit of a head scratcher to why this is this way.
Well, and to use the NFL as an example, if you look back on the last like 20 years of Super Bowls, it's been New England, Indianapolis, Baltimore, Denver, and like that, and Pittsburgh, and that's about it from the AFC. And in the NFC, it's been like almost every team, but like Detroit, the difference in both, like one is dominant, like, and it's not like one conference is better than the other, but one is dominated by a handful of teams, and the other is, everyone has a shot, and it's kind of like you said, the West in hockey is better, the West in basketball is better. It's I don't know. It just seems to be like there. It's a problem, and problem's not the right word, but it's a problem in all sports. It's magnified in the CFL because of how few teams there are. If there were 16 teams in each conference, in each division in the CFL,
there's bound to be a couple good teams, right?
Of course, you know? Of course. Yeah. So it's a different thing talking about the CFL than just talk about other leagues. But it's interesting to look at those two because it's not like people are saying, hey, we should reseed the NHL playoffs, and actually they did that crazy thing with the NHL playoffs where like. Team, like if you finish first, you play. I don't know. I don't even really understand entirely how it works. Like the Pittsburgh Penguins had to play the Washington Capitals in the second round, even though they were like the second best team in the the NHL players are stupid. But anyway, this is not about the NHL. I think we've talked enough about the subject. It's a very big debate that has a lot of nuance, and it's tough to talk just about it in a short amount of time. But it was a great question and one that I thought brought some lively debate. So let's move on to the next one, if you don't mind, Mike. Adam, constant contributor to the show, asked a Ticats-centric question, and his is, what Americans would you trade before the trade deadline? So what American Ticats players would you think about dealing or deal before the trade deadline hits in October?
Yeah, it's funny. The CFL hasn't really been known for, you know, making a lot of trade deadline deals, but I only have one guy in mind, and that's Brandon Banks. I think that his time in Hamilton, even though his last game was better, minus the drop. I think his time in Hamilton is heading to an end, either it be this season or at the end of the season. He, even though he took a pay cut, I'm sure he's still making a lot of money, and he's just not producing the way that he should. So if I had to pick one player, it would probably be him.
That's who I have. Exact same guy. I thought about other players. I thought about Zach Caleros, get that big contract off the books, go after a quarterback in the offseason, give Jeremiah Mazzoli the rest of the year. Maybe he can prove that he can be a starter long term. I thought about Simone Lawrence, a guy who I love the guy to death, but hasn't really done all that much this year, and you could probably get a fairly decent haul for him. I thought about Larry Dean. Like, I thought about a lot of players in this team. CJ Gable is another guy. They don't use him. Send him to someone who will. And there's a lot of players in this team that I could see them dealing. I don't know how many they will, because at the end of the day, they still have to feel the team. Like, so I know after the John Chick trade, there's a lot of, oh, they can move this guy and this guy and that guy. It's like, okay, they can't trade 25 guys because, A, there's not going to be suitors for all these guys, and they still have to field a football team. Like, they can't trade everyone and then just say forfeit the rest of the season. So I'm not sure how many we'll see, but at the top of my list, same as yours, was Speedy B.
Excellent. Thinking great minds think alike, right, Josh?
Yeah, or complete idiots think alike. One of the two. We're one of the two. Okay, so the last question here, it's a fun one. It's also from Adam. He says, with CFL fans complaining, because complaining is what CFL fans do, about Shania Twain performing at the Grey Cup, who would be some of your dream Grey Cup performers? Fully expecting Josh to say The Rock. So I'm not going to say The Rock. But I'll let you go first, Mike. Who would be a couple of your, like, these guys would be perfect for halftime at Grey Cup?
All, you know, the most rocking band of all times.
Kip?
Sharon, Lois, and Brett.
you cover the older crowd. I'm sure they're still on television, so you covet those younger viewers. And they're Canadian. They hit it all. Exactly. They're perfect.
Exactly. I thought it was a good pick, but as a backup, I'd go with, not a very popular band. I'm really into them. They're a Canadian band from Winnipeg. They're called Propagandy. They're a really talented band. I really dig them, so I would love to see them at Grey Cup Halftime Show. It wouldn't be a big grab for the mainstream, but I would enjoy it immensely.
Yeah, so if we're talking like I get to pick one person to perform at Grey Cup Halftime, it's strictly for me. I'm picking Adele. I love Adele. She's like my favorite person in the world who I don't actually know. I think she's got a beautiful voice. I love her songs. I constantly listen to her on my iPhone. Like, I love Adele. I know she's not great for a halftime show. I know she's not Canadian, but you want to talk about attracting eyeballs. You could do a lot worse than having a 15-minute Adele concert. If you want to get me to a Grey Cup in like Saskatchewan, and say Adele's the halftime performer, I would buy a ticket that night, and I would find my way. If I had to walk to Saskatchewan, I'd pay $200 to go to a football game and get a mini Adele concert. Are you kidding me? But if I'm looking at this from a who would attract eyeballs, what would be good for the league, I think you got to go Drake. No? Yeah. Like, I'm not – I don't dislike the guy, but I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan. But that's a guy who – he's got upbeat music. He's a Canadian act, and he's someone who a lot of people like. I think he'd be pretty good. But I have to say that I think Shania Twain is an awesome choice. What don't you?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I'm not necessarily into her music, but she is – in the past, she was one of the biggest acts in the world. So, and she's doing her comeback thing right now. So, yeah, I think it's a great choice. I think it'll make not everybody happy, obviously, but I think a good majority of, you know, fans won't be angry about this move.
Yeah, it's not the Black Eyed Peas or Nickelback.
Right, exactly. You're Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
And so, not that I was against Justin Bieber playing, but I know that a lot of people were.
Well, and that's just it, too. Like, they've tried the let's appeal to millennials and bring in their guy, and that was Bieber.
I liked –
Bust.
What was that band that the Imagine Dragons or something?
They were awesome. They were absolutely they were good. Awesome.
I never really listened to them that much, but I was very impressed with their halftime show. That was great.
Yeah, I had heard a couple of songs by them, but they were phenomenal at that halftime show. It was one of those ones where I was like the Ticats were in that game. That was the Grey Cup in BC that they lost to Calgary. And I was like, okay, this is really good. Like, they can put on a hell of a show. And I think that's sort of the thing you want someone that's going to put on a good show. And I'm not sure how good of a show Shania Twain's going to put on, but she's that four quadrant. She appeals to young, old men and women. Like, she's the perfect choice. She sings upbeat pop country. Like, there's nothing, I don't think when I first started, I was like, that's a really solid choice. You hit everything you're looking for. But I think if you are looking to attract younger people, I as much as I'm not the biggest fan of his, I think Drake hits all those markers too, no?
Yeah, he's the guy that is, you know, everybody knows, right? I mean, old hags like us know him. You know, the younger generation is into him. So it would be a pretty big get. Just as like, you know, Justin Bieber was a big get because he was popular all over the world with young people. So I don't necessarily think that you're going to get new fans by getting an act like Drake or Bieber, but it would probably get some people excited.
Yeah, I need everyone who says like, oh, that Grey Cup halftime show, that's how you can attract younger people. I want to know these people who are sitting around their house waiting until the middle of the football game to turn on to watch halftime, or these people who are sitting through a CFL game that have never watched the game before, just, oh my God, but Drake's going to be halftime, Bieber's going to be halftime, or some other young, you know, like, oh, they're going to be the halftime show. I'm going to watch the first half of this game. And I need to see who those, I need someone to show me, like, say, this is one of those people. And I need to pick their brain and ask what the hell you're doing, because I don't think that I would watch Polo just because Eminem was going to do the halftime show.
Right. Yeah, I'm not watching, you know, the cricket championships because whoever's playing halftime, you know.
Yeah, especially because
– or soccer for that matter.
Someone's going to upload it to YouTube afterwards anyways, and you can watch it there without having to sit through the whole show.
Yeah, it's a bit of a funny thing to me. I year after year, I don't really care because, you know, we're football fans, so we watch because it's the championship.
But if we're going outside the music world and I could pick my dream scenario – Give me Bobby Roode versus Shinsuke Nakamura in a 15-minute wrestling match just to see those entrances. I don't know how much recent WWE you watch, Mike, but they have two of the coolest entrances in professional wrestling history. And I would just love to be at Grey Cup and be like, we're doing a wrestling show in the middle of it, and have those two entrances and have everyone going crazy and singing their theme songs. It'd be a blast. So outside the box,
I'm going to take Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels in their prime.
Okay,
that's what I'm going to do.
Look, I can't argue. Can you imagine if the Montreal Screwjob would have happened at a Grey Cup?
Grey Cup halftime.
There might have been a legit riot. Like, it happened early November. They could have very easily said, we're going to schedule this for halftime at the Grey Cup. And, well, it was in 1997, so that would have been, what, Edmonton, I think? That would have been a cold ass. That would have been cold for those guys. Michaels never would have got it. There might have been a full-blown riot. We might never have seen the end of that game.
What if, Josh? What if?
What if indeed? All right, that was a very fun way to end the show. Thank you to Adam and Ari for sending in those questions. Great job, guys. Keep them coming. We always love the questions. But that's the show. We're done for the week. Remember, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or listen to it on 3.nation.com. You want to throw us a question? please feel free to do that. You can always hit us up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle, as always, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And you can find me at JoshSmith_82, or you can post the questions like these three lovely gentlemen did in the comment section on 3downnation.com. Mike, that was episode 85 of Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Argos suck.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.